it even shining at all?
Ready to go? Here, I'll get this on.
And this one, too. Good Friday morning, everybody. Sorry about the no theme song today, but those are the glitches that we sometimes run into. And if we find it, we'll play it somewhere in between. You know, it's the song How Long Will I Love You by Al Golding. And it's just one of my absolute favorite songs. And it talks about dedication to the homeless. Well, for me, anyway. It is not a nice 29 degrees out right now in Winnipeg and headed for a high of 31. And humidity this morning when I checked was about 70%, which is always crazy in Winnipeg. We always have the humidity, and when it comes down to heat and humidity, it's really unbearable. It's 26 right now. Actually, it's a really unbearable situation if you've got to stay out there 24/7. Today, I have a really special guest. We've been talking about having Raphael on the show for a while, but as things work out with radio, it doesn't always work out when you want it to. Raphael, how do you pronounce your last name again?
Cerezo.
Cerezo. And Raphael is the man for Boxstall Construction in Winnipeg in dealing with nonprofits and the community organizations. And I'm really happy to have Raphael on because, you know, he does have a story to tell. Plus, you know, to have a corporation like Boxstall, you know, make a difference and have a community-minded spirit is really, really important because things don't get done without that. Raphael, thanks for coming in today. And really, really happy to finally have you on air. And what I usually do with all my guests is just ask for a brief bio. And you have a really interesting story, and we'll get into that. But, you know, what brought you into to where you are today? And we'll go from there.
Sure. So first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure, you know, to be on this radio station. So a little bit about myself, even though I was born in Canada. So when I was 6 years old, my family, we moved back to Spain because we are from there. And, you know, 2013 situation in Spain wasn't looking that good. So I decided to come back to Canada. And what at the first point was supposed to be a travel of dreams and hopes, you know, everything is slaughtered right away because being Canadian citizen, I thought that I was gonna, you know, that everything was gonna be easier. But the first roadblock that I found is, you know, when I was trying to get a job, basically no one wanted to hire me because I didn't have any experience in Canada. So, you know, that was the first challenge. And, you know, the second challenge is that it is the economical situation that I came into when I was here in Canada because I couldn't get a job. So, you know, my funds, they were very limited. So I only have like $300 in my pocket. So it doesn't give you for much with $300. So.
Right. Yeah, how can you get a place to live even?
Exactly, yeah. So basically, in summary, I have to start working for free and you know, because no one wanted to hire me. So I needed to get that Canadian experience here. Right. So finally, until I was able to get a job. So basically, I was like 2 or 3 months basically living on the street, you know, with not even a place where I could just pass the night, or not even a place where I could take a shower or just, you know, have some rest and sleep. And at that time, I didn't know anyone here in Canada. So I didn't know of all these many not-for-profit organizations that they could have helped me out at some point. But I wasn't aware of any of them. So I basically was a few months struggling like that. And then when I was able to find a job, bring my family here to Canada. I was working with a construction company in Saskatoon, and I got another job in Regina, so okay. I decided to move to Regina. But it was only me because my family was in Saskatoon, and you know, in your life, you have priorities.
Yes.
And, you know, so first priority is give my family a house and food. And, you know, it came up that the last priority on the list was to get a place for me to sleep. So basically, almost over a year, almost a year, yeah, 11 months. So I was basically living in my car from Monday to Friday, because that's when I was in Regina, and on the weekends I was heading back to Saskatoon. Yeah, right. So it was quite a challenge time, to say the least.
I'm sure it was. Yeah, when you came back to Winnipeg, how did you get involved in the construction area?
Yeah, so basically, I was headhunted in some way through LinkedIn to join Boxtel, which actually is a privilege to be working with Manitoba's builder, because I mean, I guess that everybody in the province now that Boxtel, they've been not only building Manitoba for the last 100 years, but they've been supporting the community and the not-for-profit for over 100 years, and you know, and in some way. It came to the point where basically Boxtel's purpose to help and serve the community line up with my purpose as well, my personal purpose, because in some way, the experience that I went through, it shaped me the way that I am and the way that I think and the way that I have my priorities. So I was able to link Boxtel's purpose and my personal purpose. And, you know, so when I moved to Winnipeg in 2020, I started first working with Main Street, and you know, at that point I thought, okay, this is what I want for my life. I think that I want to help the community and support those people in need, because I think that there is out there a misunderstanding that we need to put an end to that, because you know, sometimes we think that people, they are homeless or they're in that situation because they did, or they want to be there, or they deserve it. So, but you know, I think that that's totally wrong, because you know, when I was basically living on the street, so I didn't want to be there.
No, of course.
And to be honest with you, I never thought that I could be there, but I was there. So I think that there needs to be a society's commitment to help the guys, because.
There really, really does, and that's sadly lacking. But thank goodness that, you know, corporations like Boxtel, you know, there are some out there that really do give an effort to support, you know, to work to reduce homelessness. As I did not mention our radio call letters, you're listening I have no fixed address right here at CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. And today we're talking to Raphael. What is your exact title at Boxtel?
I'm a project development manager.
Project development manager, and again, working a lot with nonprofits. And, you know, it's so important that, you know, one of the keys to reducing homelessness, and I will stand on it, that we will never end homelessness. I truly do not believe that, because even if we had all the money, had all the private sector money in the world, you can't just put people in housing. We need the capacity to actually support them, right? And there are not enough people in this world to do that. And even in today's world, the nonprofits and the people that work with the housing sector are short-staffed as it is, and you know, we're talking about the Accelerated Housing Fund and others. And okay, if you're going to put 400 new units in, how are you going to support those people? And there's some short-sightedness there from a person who works, you know, with case managers and supporting people with people. I just shake my head and say, "What are you doing?" You know, you need to have some foresight. We need, tell me a little bit about. I think what's really important. You and I had a coffee about a month ago, and we started talking about homelessness and that lived experience. And could you, if you're comfortable, just share a little bit about your time that you you know, lived without a roof over your head?
No, absolutely. And you know, that's
because it's important that we hear from stories from people like yourself.
Absolutely. And you know, that's something that I don't mind sharing at all, because in any case, there is a saying that says what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That, so
yeah.
It's not only, it doesn't only make you stronger, mm-hmm. but as well it makes you change, or let's say is yeah the perception
yes.
that you have of life. So
yes.
you know, and actually so being homeless or just not having a place where you could take a shower, so it's tough, you know, and because you know, so I was for 2 or 3 months, and basically my question at the end of the day was okay, where I'm gonna be sleeping today, or just laying in some place.
Right.
And sometimes I was just kicked out of a mall because I was just sitting on a couch and just falling asleep there. And you know, on other occasions, because you need to take a bath or something, so
yes.
I was just buying like a gallon of water, maybe just in the middle of October, November, just getting in some place and just pouring the water on me just to take a shower, or maybe as well, you know, just going to those swimming pools and just basically taking a bath there. And so it was tough, and you know, but and I think that and I agree with you what we spoke about the other day with about how we could help these guys. It's not only about providing housing, it's about providing support. So you know, one thing that helped me during that all that time is that every day that was passing by, I wasn't thinking, okay, how many days I'm gonna be like this, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
My only thinking at the end of the night was, okay, I'm just one night or one day closer, because you know, in some way, I could say that I have a purpose, and that helped me basically to overcome all these situations. And I think that's what these people they need a purpose,
yes.
because you know, let's think of a woman or a parent who they have lost their child, they have been taken away because they can't take care of them. So what is the purpose that you think that persons they have in their mind? They say I lost my kid, so what is my purpose here? So if we were able to rebuild that purpose to those guys,
that's a bit, I'm so happy that you're talking about that, because purpose is a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah
so it gives you basically the motivation and the strength. Because I recall one of the days I phoned my wife, because they were back in Spain. It was just here myself, and I was just crying. Mm. Okay, I can't anymore. But I thought, okay, we need to fight, because you know, I came from Spain to Canada all alone. But I thought, okay, I'm not gonna give up. I wanna continue fighting, and you know, everything turned out pretty well at the end.
Mm.
But again, it was because I had in some way a purpose. So when I was able to get a job, and you know, and then and I moved by myself in Regina.
Yeah.
So it came to the situation again, but it wasn't that bad like before, because at least I have my car where I was basically spending the night.
Mm.
And but you know, it was challenging, because on the winter time, sleeping in a car with minus 40 is not easy. But in the summertime, because you know, I didn't want anyone to know the situation that I was going through.
Yeah, of course not.
Exactly. So I was just sleeping on the car in a parking lot. So basically, but the problem was with the summertime, the nights, they are very short. So
yes.
I was basically getting to the car to sleep at 10 or 11 p.m. But then at 4 or 5 a.m. when the sun was out, I needed to get out of the car, because I didn't want anyone to see me.
Yeah, that is the whole thing, you know, in the car I was sleeping in. I actually had to get out at 7 in the morning and could only come back at 7 a.m. because I was sleeping in a car that was in the back lane beside an auto wrecking place, and those were their hours.
Mm.
And the big thing, and you mentioned it too, you do not want to be seen as being homeless.
Yeah.
You do not.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, but I recall, because, and I think that, you know, I think that we need to educate people a little bit in all this process, because sometimes I was feeling that I'm not saying asking to come and say help me out, but at least to show some compassion, because a few times on the parking lots where I was getting with my car then asleep, I wasn't doing anything bad.
Yeah, no, of course.
More than once I got myself kicked out because, oh, you can't be here, man. I'm just doing nothing. I'm just sleeping. And you know, when I was working in one of the companies, and I was basically didn't have a car, so I was walking to my place, and you know, I remember those very cold winter days when I was walking, and you know, I could see people just from the company was just passing by and not even say, okay, you need a ride or something.
And I think people don't realize that you really, really do need a home. You need a place to settle in every night, so you actually can go to work.
Absolutely.
You know, I foolishly, I thought that when I was homeless, I could actually get a job back in advertising. Mm-hmm. So I went with another organization, and they actually hired me. Mm-hmm. So there I was in my car, walking from Logan and William all the way to Provence and Desmiron every single day and back again. And it was hard. You know, I'd been away from advertising for, you know, quite a while already, and to get back in it, but to have that concentration and the drive you need to do the job, mm-hmm. was really, really difficult, because you need a place to settle down and think about the day and move forward the next day. You know, I was getting up out of my thing, going and washing up in the McDonald's, mm-hmm. and the Burger King, and then going walking all the way, like, well, how many miles is that? 4 or 5 miles to work, and then back again. And one of the things that you don't notice yourself is somebody said to me, geez, don't you ever take a bath? You know, because,
yeah,
you know, you're out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you might, you know, wash your clothes once in a while, but there still is that, you know, that smell of not being, yep. able to wash yourself properly. And it was really embarrassing, and I had not realized that myself, but the guy told me, like, everybody around here is, boy, does that ever smell?
You know? Oh, yeah.
And never mind the fact, I lasted I think 8 working days, mm-hmm. and I made myself $750, which carried me for a little while on the street, but it was almost impossible.
Yeah.
Now, you must have found that difficult.
Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, I was in a conference, just, you know, with during all this COVID, and we all know that COVID brought lots of challenges to the world. And one of the things that this guy mentioned about COVID and about homeless people is, because, I mean, they couldn't go to the washrooms because they were all locked down. And, you know, when the guy said that, it came to me, to my mind, when I was in that situation.
It was because, worse
again,
than that.
I didn't know anything or anybody, yep. or any organization, right. that could help me. So I was maybe at 3 a.m. in the morning. So, okay, so where I'm going now to just...
Yep, go to the washroom.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that, again, during COVID, it was even worse than that, because they allowed nobody to even sit in the malls,
yeah.
because they had everything taped off with yellow tape, right, mm-hmm. everywhere. And they removed all the seating from the malls. So where did people go?
Yeah.
That was my big question. Everybody's wondering, where is everybody going?
Yeah.
We don't see them anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was tough on people who were housed. It was 20 times tougher for people that were homeless,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, because we work with lots of not-for-profit organizations, and, you know, I have full commitment with them. You know, I get phone calls on the weekends, and, you know, because I know that they need help, and sometimes I get asked, so why are you so dedicated?
Yeah.
Why are you guys in Boxer so dedicated to these, let's say, challenge, or these, you know, your endeavor?
So
basically, my question, the first thing that I answer, and this is something that I'd like the listeners to think about this one as well. So my first answer is, okay, so why not?
Mm.
So, okay.
Why not?
That's
a really good question.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
because why not we can't offer help or support to that people, you know?
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, we finally found our theme song. Instead of taking the other music break, we're going to play our theme song. But first of all, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg. And you're listening to Of No Fixed Address.
If I can, how long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. You, as long as you want.
And we are back, folks, and it's, I think we just looked at the temperature. And that was Al Golding, by the way, playing my my theme song. And if you hear that, and it's Friday at 11, you're listening to No Fixed Address. It's 27, going up to 31 today, I think, 32, actually. And I can't stress it enough. Be kind. When you're going to Tim's, when you're going to Robin's, wherever you go for your coffee. Actually, on a day like this, buy a nice coffee or a nice tea, you know, or extra bottle of water, right? And again, if you can go to Starbucks and spend $5 on a drink, you can spend $10 and buy two. And please be kind to the folks on the street. And you know that there's going to be somebody on Portage Avenue or nearby asking for something. You know, I just finished my lived experience walk for the lived experience circle, and we're going to be, going out on Saturday and handing out bottles of water, and tomorrow morning making up a whole batch of hot dogs and handing those out for people in Air Canada Park and the areas, because it's really, really important that we look after people's needs. Yes, you know, there's a water fountain in Central Park, but most of the time, and I'm really, really thankful for the city to put water in all over the place, in about 8 places in the city. But you know that water fountain in Central Park is always got warm or hot water coming out. And that doesn't do a bunch of good. Sure, it'll hydrate some people, but it's just not the best. So really, again, I can't stress enough, especially on days like people die of heat stroke and dehydration. We need to fix that, because that leads to all sorts of other problems, and people die. Last summer, we lost 3 or 4 people just from the elements, and people just don't die on the street because of cold, but they also die in the heat of the summer. Raphael, I just let's talk for a bit about projects that you've been involved in, and I know from one is I call it the village play. It's right across from Salvation Army, and I can't remember the indigenous name of it, but there's 22 units I think in there. Mm-hmm. And and talk to me about that and perhaps the Main Street project and a couple other projects that you've been involved in.
Yes,
or Boxtel has been involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said before, I mean, Boxtel and myself, and you know, all Boxtel employees, we have a commitment with the not-for-profit sector.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we understand that they have very limited funds, so we provide the best value for fair funds, and
right.
And you know what, basically that translates into working with more and more not-for-profits organizations. So basically, you know, right now we have quite a few projects that we are working on, like, for example, with the Lighthouse Mission. We are looking at the renovation of 667 to be a detox center as well, with Main Street as well.
Yeah.
We have a few jobs going on. And you know, with...
I did not know about Lighthouse Mission. That's really good.
Yeah. That's it. It's about to start. We have jobs with TOBA, with the Canadian Mental Health Association. Mm. We're just basically on early planning there as well.
Yep.
We have a new one with the Elmwood Community Resource Center.
Yes.
So, we have quite a few projects with an not-for-profit. And, you know, and there is some similarity in all of them. The first thing is that, I mean, all those team members, they are amazing people, mm-hmm. dedicated people to the
yes.
community, that they do their best to help people. And, you know, and that's where we come into the game. We try to basically close the gaps where they are not experts yes. on, like, for example, in budget construction.
I know you do a lot of grant writing for people, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is, you know, that's so critical because you can't get money without it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And it's very, very difficult to mm-hmm. write a good grant.
Yeah. Yeah, so we guide them in basically from going from early planning and mm-hmm. talking with the city or authorities having the jurisdiction to see if their properties is viable from a code or zoning standpoint.
Yeah.
We help them as well or guide them through different funding opportunities. Mm-hmm. So basically we try to close the gaps and help them. Because, you know, any time that I meet with those ones, for them, these the projects, they are like a vision or a dream.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, I recall like in 2020 when I met first with the guys from the Lighthouse Mission with Peter McMillan mm-hmm. and Daniel Edmond.
Yep.
Basically, what they told me, and it really stayed on my mind, okay, this is our vision, this is mm-hmm. our dream.
Yes.
And they were dreaming for years. So right now, 3 years later.
And they had a changeover about 3 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So now we are just about to start construction. So mm-hmm. What I mean with that, and when I'm saying about Boxtel's and my personal purposes, mm-hmm. I mean, we have a commitment with the community because what we do mm-hmm. is our only building. We
yeah.
are basically helping to get their dreams and mm-hmm. helping to help the community,
yes.
which is basically they are the final goals in mm-hmm. all our, let's say, integrated efforts, not
yep.
only Boxtel but as well with the not-for-profits mm-hmm. that we are working with, is basically to help the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I find that, you know, so refreshing that, you know, major corporation, you know, like Boxtel is doing all this work. And I know that it was a long time in the planning, but, you know, the village across from Salvation Army has 22 people there. And, you know, I personally would have selected a better spot, but people are in housing there, not on the street. And I know that those lives are being saved.
Absolutely.
By not being on the street. Mm. And, you know, I really wish that... I had an experience with City Hall this week, and I really wish that our City Hall would have some folks down at City Hall. Our mayor certainly has a good attitude, and but some folks at City Hall just simply don't understand the gravity of homelessness. I went before EPC this week on Hope Alley, and you know, to get radiant heat lamps, and you know, and you know, not reading heat lamps, but get canopies with lighting and heat lamps all in one,
mm-hmm.
So people can sit on the benches in the cold weather and not get hypothermia. And believe me, I suffered from hypothermia. I suffered from frostbite. I suffered from heat stroke. I suffered from a heart attack. I've suffered from pneumonia out there, and the elements are all detrimental. And yet, you know, it's, for some reason, you know, they just want to kick things down the road and not really deal with the problem of folks out there. And there are some really good counselors out there, and I'm friends with a few, and their hearts are in the right place. But there are a couple out there that don't understand and say negative things about the homeless and don't yeah. believe in the rights of the homeless. And so I'm uplifted when I hear, you know, organizations, or not organizations, but corporations, strong corporations like Boxtel, doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And getting things done. And tell me, you know, you work with Main Street, but I know they're planning, you know, to move upwards, mm-hmm. you know, five stories or four stories or something, and put in 100 units mm-hmm. or something like that. How do you, you know, what is your measure of importance on something like that?
Sorry?
What is your measure of importance? How important is it to build, you know, 100 extra units?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know.
We're 150, I think.
Yeah, that's a pretty good question because at the very end.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but.
No, but, you know, and I'm not an expert on housing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when I try to go as many events as possible. And I
know you do. I see
you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But what I'm good at is connecting the dots.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I hear someone, an expert, telling something, I connect with what another expert
yeah.
is saying in another event. So, and at the very end, my, let's say, and I had the opportunity to discuss this matter with another expert that came from Ontario about What are their forecasting for the future of homelessness? Because, you know, I've been here in Winnipeg for 4 years.
Yeah.
And to be honest with
maybe
you,
we're going backwards.
Yeah, it's not getting better.
No.
So, and again, so I asked this person, okay, what are your thoughts on this? Because, and again, my expertise is in construction.
Yes.
But not in homelessness. I don't have data. And you know what this guy told me, basically, it freezed me up because he said, yeah, this is not getting better.
No.
It's getting worse.
It is.
So, and you know, so that was a big impact for me, because, okay, if we are like this today, 2024, so are we doing enough work to basically to not get to the situation in 10 years where we are way worse than before?
Yeah, that, you know, that's huge. You know, I've been part of the time count of the homeless census since day one. And we're not seeing those numbers go down, right? We interview people who are, we send out 300 volunteers and talk to everybody, like absolutely everybody on the street. And those numbers are not going down.
No.
And, you know, if the numbers are not going down, why are they not going down? Well, you know, our federal government has a little bit to do with that, with their immigration laws as well, which are putting pressure on everybody here. And even the folks that live here have been here for generations. It's compounding everything. But by the same token, we have to have political will as well. We have to have political will and be able to spend the money where it needs to be spent. And one of the things that the federal government just finished was putting in an accelerator fund where Winnipeg is supposed to get $120 million altogether. Right now they're sitting on $40 million for housing. But it's not geared to minimum income. Yeah. It's not geared to folks on the street who can move into someplace. We have a discussion at our community advisory board yesterday, and we tell In Homeless Winnipeg or advise In Homeless Winnipeg where to spend the money that we get from the Reaching Home of the federal government. And we talking about the accelerator fund yesterday, and we had a person from the city who's managing that. And the problem is, you know, that they're inundated with applications, but they're coming from the wrong side of the tracks. They have a lot of applications from River Heights, Tuxedo, and other, you know, higher income places, which will do nothing for the folks that need it, right? And without the understanding of, like, the city's understanding of what affordable is 80% of market value, which is not affordable for anybody living on welfare or living, you know, on a minimum wage. You know, there needs to be a systemic, a really, really, you know, better understanding and systemic change happen. But with the federal government feeding, you know, spending billions across the country on middle-income housing, hoping that the trickle-down effect, it's not going to happen. This is why we're not making any headway.
Yeah.
Right? Plain and simple. And it just is so sad that there's no level of understanding that was really, really needed.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, because, you know, as I said, I have a personal purpose to help the community. And, you know, I've been trying to reach out to different key players in the community and, you know, trying to set up meetings with them to, you know, to see how we could help. Or but, you know, the response that I have received is not what I was expecting.
No.
But because basically I think, you know, because we have amazing not-for-profit organizations there that we just need to, in some way, try to channelize all those funds.
Yes.
Because again, most of the affordable housing that is going, it's not specifically aiming for those guys that we see on the streets.
Exactly. It's not. It certainly isn't.
Yeah. So, you know, my goal, what I'm trying to achieve here is to build kind of an alliance so we could basically provide tools and means and methods to the not-for-profit sector to be more powerful in some way, work together and not in silos. And so hopefully those guys, we could give them what they need to take the lead on building right housing for houses for basically the people that they live on the streets.
Yeah, and again, that's the thing, appropriate housing too, right? You know, and, you know, we have a lot of people, we again, appropriate housing is a key word, and adequate housing, because, you know, we have so many, right now we have a lot of unlicensed rooming houses and board, and we put people in places where, you know, drugs are really available and being tossed or passed around. We have bed bugs and cockroaches and you know, we have people putting homeless folks in places with no power and no water, really trouncing on the human rights of those folks, right? And, you know, that's the way I appreciate so much the effort that you are putting in and Voxlook, you know, puts in doing the right thing. And I get so frustrated at times over it, and I have to try to calm that frustration, because, it just, it's not, you know, it doesn't help. And but we do need political will.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and my good friend Gino D'Estasio, who's he was vice president of research, but I think he's taken a higher role at the University of Winnipeg. I think he's number two or three here at the university right now, and he helped articulate and was the architect for the At Home Safe Swap program here in Winnipeg, and. The cost of, you know, this is what people political figures always look at, you know, today, and they have 4-year lifespans. But Gino was an architect of the At Home Safe Swap program, and that program proved that you can house people for 20 and give them supports 22.5% cheaper than leaving people on the street.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we had people using up $40,000-$50,000 in 3 or 4 months just on ambulatory care, ambulance, hospitalizations, police custody, hospitalizations, right? After my experience on Monday, I'm just in a totally frustrated mode right now, because I just see how you know, blank stares. When you talk about the cost of human lives, there's a blank stare.
Yeah.
And so, but you're going to an event after the show today, you're going to Aboriginal Health and Wellness on Harm Reduction, which is a big part, plays a big part in other cities and other provinces in helping folks on the street. Like Vancouver, for example, they're 2 decades ahead of us, you know, in harm reduction. And you go down to East Hastings and 2 o'clock in the morning, it's as busy as it is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because people are getting help, right?
Yeah.
And with needle exchanges and things like that, and keeping people as healthy as you can. What are your thoughts on, I mean, it's a really controversial subject, and it's taken WHA a long time to get this place, and I think that they're probably going to experiment with it and see how it goes. What is your, again, this is getting away from construction, but what is your thoughts on that?
On what, sorry?
On harm reduction. You're going there right after.
Yeah, as I said, I think
it's controversial for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, because homelessness is linked with harm reduction, you know, with people going, struggling with drugs, addictions, or mental health issues as well. So,
oh, absolutely.
At the very end, as we discussed, when we are providing housing, we need to make sure that we provide those supports, because just by giving housing to someone who is not ready, maybe just to receive a house, because maybe they are just out of the system, out of the society, so we need to bring them back. And you know, so if we don't provide those supports, I think that we are basically failing. We are just, like people used to say, we are spinning our wheels, and we are not moving, we are not taking traction. So basically, and again, I'm not an expert on housing, but you know, based on what I've been told or what I've read, I think that we need to provide housing, but we need to provide as well those supports, because again, people, they need to rebuild their purpose.
Yeah, and you know, as a person who is sort of an expert, you know, as I've been in the business for about 7 years now, quietly and under the radar, I call it leading from beneath. it's so important to give these supports to folks, and again, you know, basically when we get a person in housing, and the whole thing is too, it's one of the things about homelessness and housing is, and I have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, it's not on our timetable. There are some who will call the police in and remove people from their camps along the river and put them in housing. But the recidivism I have a tough time with that word, is a big number because people don't stay. They go back on the street because they're not there on their own free will. And, you know, this last winter we pulled people out of bus shelters, but you know what? It took almost all winter. Whether it's 30, minus 30, minus 40, it took almost all winter just to get a couple out of that particular bus shelter. You know, and it's not on our timetable. It's on their timetable. And when they come to the realization that there's a better life for them, perhaps, okay, let's give it a shot, right? Then. But once we do that, we have to support them with their, once they're ready, again, support them with their addictions and with their trauma-informed care. But trauma-informed care has to start right away. But we have to support them with their addictions and mental health. But only when they're ready, otherwise they'll fight it. And so that's all part of the housing. It's just not putting people in, here you go, here's an apartment for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that'll last 5 minutes sometimes. Yeah. When I was with the Adam Shea SWAT program, the program we were just talking about, that national program, we sometimes have to house people. We were only supposed to house people four times. We broke the rules and housed people seven times because they could not get used to the being in housing, could not get used to responsibility. Got lonesome, had their friends in, trashed the place a dozen times. You know? And the good part about the At Home Stay SWAT program was that we had a full complement of carpenters and people that would go in and repair those apartments so the landlord would not have to worry about it. But there's so many complexities to housing, you know, and things that, you know, you are not, I don't have to work with, but what you do is provide the housing in the first place. And I really appreciate the fact that, you know, I was talking to Jamil, and he came to my walk last Saturday for Liz Experience, and we were talking about actually Boxstall Construction, and mm-hmm. I said I was going to have you on the air, and mm-hmm. and you know, he said we really need partners like Boxstall in our corner, and people who have a vision with us, you know, to move
forward. And you know, it's not only about the vision, because you know, I go through so many events, and you know, I like to, I'm a person of body language reactions, you know, and I see that lots of them, they just go there to make their presence,
they do,
to be seen, and they walk away, and you know,
and learn nothing and get nothing from it.
We don't need that. We need people that they are passionate, that they are dedicated, that they are committed to the goal, that basically, which is helping the community. So, you know, so sometimes, and you know, you could read those guys from meters, and we don't need that.
No.
No. We need real players. We need people that is committed.
And I, again, I'm just trying to figure out how we change the political landscape, you know, because we have a counselor that says, well, I'm not, you know, I don't care about human rights for the homeless. This is a counselor. Yeah. I care about my neighborhood. And that's fine, care about your neighborhood, but isn't this country built on human rights?
Yeah.
You know, and escaping a monarchy and all that kind of stuff, right? And so we have to really work hard at all different levels. Anything else that you might like to leave our audience with today?
No, I think that basically the message is that, I mean, we have a kind of a moral, ethical
obligation
to help these guys, because, again, they are not there. And, you know, the other day one guy said, I have never heard a teenager saying, I want to be homeless when I grow up. Never. So, which means that those guys, they are there not because they want to. They are there because, you know, sometimes you struggle through life and without knowing or without realizing, without wanting, you just get there.
Yeah.
So I'd like people to think about that and hopefully, because I'm seeing that sometimes we are losing like the human touch of people, you
That's
know,
it.
And we need to get back to be more open to help people, and you know, and because again, I agree with you. If you go to buy a coffee, or I mean, if you buy another coffee to one guy there, I mean, at the end of the day, Yep. It doesn't gonna.
No, it's not gonna break you.
Whatever, break it down. So yeah, I'd like people to be more proactive mm-hmm. about all this situation.
Yeah, thank you for that, and we really, really need to. And I asked counsel the other day just to reach out and you know, sure, you can touch canopies, you can touch concrete, but let's reach out and touch humanity.
Yeah.
Right? But we need everybody to actually do that. And I think we're going to hear news this summer if the weather continues in the plus 30 range with humidex in the high 30s, whatever it is, going to be we're going to have some fatalities. And we can mitigate that.
Yeah.
We can reduce that if everybody does what they can to, mm-hmm. You can never do too little. Bring a bottle of water from home, or bring a container with iced tea in it, and iced coffee, and just give it to somebody on the street. And it's so important that we do our little bit. We don't have to do a lot. You can never do too little. You can never do too much. Mm-hmm. But I'm grateful for your organization too, mm-hmm. that is doing the work, and for your attitude. And I think we need more people to have the right attitude about things, yeah. and try to understand what it's like to be out there, and where many cannot, right? Mm-hmm. But thank you so much, Raphael, for coming on.
A pleasure to be here.
Coming on the air today, and we mm-hmm. finally got it done, and continue your good work. And we'll meet for lunch next week.
Absolutely.
But and again, because I'll have to say this, Blackstock Construction has been very kind in the last 2 years to contribute to the Human Rights Symposiums. One and two on poverty and homelessness. Mm-hmm. I brought it to you before, and I the offer is still open. I will come with you to your office,
absolutely,
to
yeah.
your building,
we are coordinating
to your event, to your barbecue, and give you an uplifting message of inspiration and hope. Mm-hmm. And because we all need way, way, way more of that. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for coming in today. And Debbie, thank you again for being such a great producer all the time and pushing the buttons. Debbie was late. Was usually here way before me, and today she was late. And I was saying, "Oh no, I got to figure out a way to push all these buttons again." And I do not remember how to push all the buttons. So Deb, thanks again for all your work here. And folks, come back next week, and we are looking to have North End Child and Family Service, North End Children's Advocate, come in and talk about children exiting Child and Family Services, which is still a huge, huge issue in this province, because there's no exit strategy. And we need to hear more. We need to hear the story of how folks, and he's going to bring a youth with him to talk about his experiences within the system. So we're going to have a good, really good chat next Friday. But come on back, and we'll talk to you then. Have a good week. Thanks, Raphael.
Together, who's to say we bathe in unholy water? We write our names in concrete playgrounds. And now I'm moving so fast and far away. I'm overhead, you're bathing in my thoughts today. And if I could wade through to you, it'd be okay. Out of folded into the perfect shape. I know it ought to fit, but the paper cuts are getting deeper. I know this is out of folded into the perfect shape.
était polie, attentionnée. Elle était petite, toujours pressée. Elle était ouverte, imaginative. Une demi-douzaine de cadenas, six clés différentes, ça marche à chaque fois. Une demi-douzaine de cadenas, six clés différentes, ça marche à chaque fois. Chouette, dédiée, elle était fermée, désintéressée. Une demi-douzaine de cadenas, six clés différentes, ça marche à chaque fois. Une demi-douzaine de cadenas, six clés différentes, ça marche à chaque fois.
That way when you're walking the night. Inside that sound, chasing every sunrise in the back seats of cars. Hold my not to reveal them, but they came out in every word I said. Then out in the country, when I let my guard down, I could tell you what